China does see this as an attempt by the United States to work towards containing it.
Chinese and Russian missiles prompt a U.S. policy shift. It's Tuesday, October 23rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. You'll find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australia apologizes for sexual abuse. Rohingya Hindus observe a festival. The bravery of Afghan women on stage. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton met Monday with top Russian officials about President Donald Trump's announced intention to pull out of a key Cold War arms deal with Moscow. Bolton discussed the fate of the three-decade-old INF, or Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, with the Russian Security Council chief ahead of a meeting with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Bolton is set to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin Tuesday. President Donald Trump announced on Saturday the decision to pull out of the treaty, citing what he claimed was Russia's building and testing missiles that violate the 1987 treaty. In March, Navy Admiral Harry Harris, who was then commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, told the Senate Armed Services Committee that China was benefiting because of the United States' adherence to the INF. He was questioned by Senator Tom Cotton.
How many of China's land-based missile forces do you estimate have a range of 500 to 5,500 kilometers?
In an unclassified venue, Senator, over 90%. Over 90% fall in that range.
And how many missiles do you have that fall into that range?
I have none, sir.
You have none?
Right.
Why do you have none?
Because that range, 500 to 5,500 kilometers, is defined in the INF Treaty, the Intermediate Nuclear Force Treaty, which prohibits nuclear and cruise missiles and ICBMs, or nuclear and conventional cruise and ICBMs, or ballistic missiles in that range. And we adhere to the INF Treaty religiously, as we should. It's a treaty that we signed on for. China is not a signatory to the treaty, so they're not obliged to follow that treaty, and we can't legitimately, in my opinion, criticize China for developing weapons that contravene the treaty because they did not sign on to it.
Because the only two parties to the treaty are Russia and the United States.
That's correct.
Could the inability to match China's missile force be reason enough for the United States to pull out of the INF? Ankit Panda of the Federation of American Scientists, an expert in missile defense and nuclear issues in Asia, tells VOA Asia's Ira Melman that is one of the reasons the pullout might take place.
The reason I find it unconvincing, or at least unconvincing so far without further debate, is because, first of all, it's not necessarily the case that the United States needs to mirror image Chinese capabilities to successfully deter China. I do care about deterring China, but I don't necessarily think that we need to have exactly the kind of ballistic and cruise missile arsenal that they do, in particular because the kind of geography we're dealing with in East Asia is quite different from the geography of Western Europe, where ground launch missiles in Central Europe and Western Europe played a critical role through the early 1980s in deterring the Soviet Union. In Asia, we're dealing with primarily a maritime domain where there are very few actual chunks of land in allied countries. Guam is probably the closest U.S. territory where these weapons could be deployed. But apart from that, looking at specific U.S. allies and partners, it's not clear to me that, A, the kind of territory that exists would be particularly useful for those kinds of deployments, and B, there's a complicated issue of allied politics here. You know, we think about a place like Okinawa, and we think about potential ballistic missile deployments there or cruise missile deployments there, or even conventional weaponry. I'm not even talking about nuclear weaponry. It's not clear to me that allied populations would be willing to host U.S. Missiles on their soil.
Why is it that China is putting up such a vociferous complaint against pulling out of the treaty?
China does see this as an attempt by the United States to work towards containing it. The reason that China's arsenal looks the way it does is not entirely to do with the United States, although that's certainly a big part of it. China also borders India, where a lot of those INF range missiles that it deploys do play a role in deterring New Delhi. India is also a nuclear power in this context, so China does have concerns there. But otherwise, China's nuclear arsenal remains particularly lean, and the Chinese do see this as an as a play by the United States to effectively counter its fairly lean deployment. I think while we do see the Chinese protesting right now, I think in 5 to 10 years' time, if this does play out the way I think it will, and the United States will develop new INF range capabilities and deploy them in East Asia, I think we will see changes in China's own posture, potentially China building considerably a greater number of missiles and potentially even making some subtle changes to its nuclear doctrine.
Defense advocates in Washington say the INF treaty keeps the United States from developing a new generation of weapons in a world that faces new global security challenges. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOANews.com. The Koreas and United Nations Command work toward disarming the DMZ. South China Sea Code of Conduct gains momentum as China moves to complete militarization. Philippines scrambles to fund undersea energy as import prices hit consumers. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, we invite you to stop by the VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Australia's Prime Minister has delivered an historic national apology to all victims and survivors of institutional child sexual abuse. It follows a damning 5-year inquiry into abuse across churches, schools, and other public organizations, as we hear from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison has said he's sorry for one of the most shameful chapters in Australian history. A royal commission, Australia's highest form of inquiry, found that tens of thousands of children had been abused over many decades in orphanages, churches, schools and other institutions. Its report published last year said too often the victims were ignored and the perpetrators protected. Morrison told Parliament Monday that it was a national tragedy.
Silenced voices, muffled cries in the darkness, unacknowledged tears, the tyranny of invisible suffering, the never-heard pleas of tortured souls bewildered by an indifference to the unthinkable theft of their innocence. Today, Australia confronts a trauma, an abomination.
Survivors of abuse have welcomed Australia's official apology, but many stress that much more needs to be done to heal their scars, including a less bureaucratic system of compensation and changes to the law to punish those who conceal abuse. Victims are eligible to apply for payments of up to $106,000. Although there are complaints, the redress scheme is too slow. The Prime Minister also promised to set up a new national museum to raise awareness and understanding of the impacts of child sexual abuse. It will also memorialise victims' stories. Following the Commission's 5-year investigation, 2,500 cases of abuse were handed to Australian authorities and scores of prosecutions are underway. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Bangladesh's Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina says there are more than 1 million Rohingya refugees living in Bangladesh. Among the Muslim-majority ethnic group, there are approximately 450 Hindus living in the city of Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh. VOA's Muazzim Hossein Shakil visited these Hindus as they were observing their first-ever Hindu festival called Durga Puja and filed this report, narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
With the help of the Bangladesh government, approximately 450 Rohingya Hindus celebrated their first-ever Durga Puja in Bangladesh. Durga Puja is a Hindu festival that marks the victory of the goddess Durga in a battle with an evil demon. According to the Rohingya Hindus, they have never been able to publicly celebrate Durga Puja due to the restrictions imposed on them by the Myanmar government.
I haven't performed Durga Puja for the last 10 years and I have never been to celebrate in front of Fatima. It is really great to celebrate in Bangladesh. I'm very happy.
We would celebrate at home privately without Fatima. We couldn't do it publicly.
Thousands of Bengali Hindus celebrated the colorful Durga Puja festival all across Bangladesh and in Cox's Bazar. Rohingya Hindus were also treated to a special ceremony orchestrated by the Bangladesh government. Rohingya Hindus are hopeful that one day they will be able to celebrate Durga Puja in their homeland freely. For Muazzam Hossain Shakil in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, this is Behzhan Hamdard, VOA News.
Coming up, the stage curtains open to display bravery. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Indonesia's president is deeply concerned about the killing of journalist Jamil Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, and wants a transparent investigation. Indonesian Foreign Minister Retno Marsudi made the comments. You can visit VOA Asia 60 online and VOA Asia Facebook for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Afghan women too many times have been seen by some as victims. Victims of domestic violence, cultural limitations, political restrictions, and more. Their voices often go unheard, but not in a play produced here in Washington, D.C., called Women of Troy, Voices from Afghanistan. It's a story of Afghan women's bravery and resilience told through music and poetry. Narration is by VOA's Sheila Nurai. She brings us more.
My name is Poseidon, God of antiquity.
The Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington presented a limited run of Women of Troy, Voices from Afghanistan, a collaboration between Afghan and American artists.
I think the message is learning about Afghanistan, the many layers of the people, especially the women, goes very deep and very far back into history. And I hope everyone will get a much better understanding of Afghanistan.
Don't mock me! I feel things! I love, I hate!
Oh my! I've never known a god switch so quickly from love to hate!
It's a retelling of an anti-war play, Trojan Women, by the ancient Greek playwright Euripides. The twist? The Alliance for New Music Theater sets the story in modern-day Afghanistan, dedicated to Afghan women. Music plays a crucial role in the play, with a unique combination of cello plus Afghanistan's national instrument, rabab, and the percussive tabla. Singer and actress Jennifer Lee spent 6 months in rehearsals and says she's formed a special bond with the character she plays.
I think it was just so wonderful because it shows the unity that women across the world, we share the same plight. And I think that's so great that I was able to really capture the character of Hecuba and capture the mood of the plight of Afghanistan women.
Choreographer Liza Ahmadi thinks now is the time for the world to see the true Afghan women.
We have roots of creativity, roots of all kinds of cultures and ethnicities inside of us. And right now, the way that Afghan women and Afghans in general are presented is in a very, very flat one image. And in fact, we're incredibly complex, incredibly intelligent society.
The play's co-author Yelda Bakhtash wanted to break any stereotypes held by Westerners about Afghan women. Bakhtash hopes that through these characters, a more realistic picture of Afghan women emerges.
The perception of Afghan women in the West is that they are weak and unable to deal with difficulties. But I decided to display a different view of Afghan women, and for this reason, I tried to write about characters with abilities, achievers in Afghan history.
For Sheila Nuri in Washington, D.C., this is Behzhan Hamdard, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online on iTunes and SoundCloud. And, of course, we're streaming on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You can hear us the old-fashioned way, we sometimes say, on the radio. Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Thanks to everyone there who tuned in today. And our thanks always go to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Thomas Blondet, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team that includes Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.